Good afternoon. I know you've been here the whole day. It has been a wonderful day with tons of wonderful presentations. So I will not take too long with preview, so you can go out, go to the pub, eat well, and enjoy your afternoon. We have a deal, Nick. The first thing I want to say is thank you. Thank you to the RNIB for allowing me to be here, and thank you for your invitation. Thank you to Scotland, my second home. I lived here for 5 years, and I enjoyed it. I survived this weather for 5 fucking nights. And also mainly thanks to you for waiting this long to listen to this humble presentation from the bottom of my heart. I'm wearing thick trousers, a black or gray jumper. My hair is black. I'm fairly tall, like 1.5 meters, perhaps. Approximately, right? Who is excited about that? I will not tell you my ways, but I'm of Afro-Caribbean heritage. And I have a small PowerPoint presentation that I will be using today, and I'm using PowerPoint. People say, "But she's blind. Why is she using PowerPoint?" Well, because the sounds are there, and well, I will just present the slide with the sounds when we get there. So on the first slide on the PowerPoint, there is the logos of my university, Universidad del Sagrado Corazón, and also of the Royal Academy of Science International Trust, of which I am a member. And we are a group of blind scientists and scientists with disabilities that are working to improve and contribute to the sciences. We work on our sciences. Also, there is a picture of me, of course, with John McFaul, who is the para-astronaut. You may be aware that the European Space Agency is training an astronaut with disabilities for a possible flight to space, and we are doing our best. So we will make sure that he will fly. Even if I have to get him on my head and fly him up there, he will fly, you believe me. One of the things is that being here, to me, it means that you honestly care, and that we will reach a day that we will only care, we scientists, blind scientists, we will only care about, even if we have data, if we have access to the data, we will only care about producing new science. And we will not be able, we will not have to worry about having to become like a sighted person in order to analyze our information. That I will be able to use my own perceptual modalities in order to analyze the information and the physics and the mathematics and all the sciences and all the science and sciences that is behind it. So I agree with the people that were talking about robotics and artificial intelligence. The human mind is the most powerful engine for development. It has no equal. Who trains artificial intelligence is the human mind. So I'm here as a scientist, and the framework that I'm humbly presenting is the humble product of decades of dedication. Dedication that has only been justified by a lot of perception experiments, a lot of scientific data analyzed, and also implementations into science that have brought results of finding new events in the scientific information. We are talking from medicine, vigilance tasks, of course, astrophysics, the best science of all in the world, and other sciences. So I'm here in front of you humbly, and I take my hat off and I bow in front of you. I'm here as a scientist. I have no dominance over accessibility. I use what I find, and then I get used to it and I continue my life with it. But if you ask me about accessibility, I will not be able to answer. So there are a lot of experts in this room, and as I will direct myself to them to ask about accessibility, it's better if you ask them than to ask me. So perhaps you may already know that the sciences were using audio at the end of the 1800s. Did you know that before? Oh, so the space sciences were using audio at the end of the 1800s. Now, we were using audio, and besides that, physics, mathematics, astrophysics, and all of those theoretically, and when I say theoretically, is that it depends on mathematics. We depend, and as one of the artificial intelligence person and the person that brought the question about the town in India, forgive me, I don't remember, is that nature is non-linear and is non-stationary. It's changing all the time. It's changing very fast and is also changing very dynamically. So our basis of expansion, or the mathematics that we use to analyze the data, we are very, very, very limited in order to have mathematical bases that will adapt dynamically and in a time-efficient manner to the information, which is what the kind person was talking about. It needs to adapt to the circumstance immediately. Besides that, we are very limited into the space of resolution that is dynamically displayed to the person that is, for example, a scientist analyzing the data. And that affects the useful dynamic range of the display that a scientist can study at any one time. To that, you have to add the limitations imposed by nature to the human eye. Oh, a lot of limitations imposed by nature on the human eye, because the human eye, we are trained, when we learn to read, we are trained to focus on the center of the visual field. So if there is anything at the periphery, most likely you will not see it, especially when you are engaged on vigilance tasks. And to that, you may add that in science, the data that we analyze is millions and millions and millions and millions of data points. And they span dozens of orders of magnitudes in time and space. And all of that adds up, right? For us not to be able to have an adaptive mathematical basis that in a time-efficient manner can adapt to the local conditions of the information. So audio was used at the end of the 1800s. And to make a long story short, once machines kicked in, and perhaps His Eminence spoke about this morning, once machinery kicked in and industrialization kicked in, machines were used. Oh, bravo, more science. I'm a scientist. I love that. To me, that's very, very, very good. But machines were used. And those machines, and this is according to Tom Shakespeare's work. He's at the University of London. According to his work, machines were used and things were more scientific, but then machines were catering people that could produce faster. Farming was no more about Wanda selling the three tomatoes or the three plantains that she grows in her backyard. It becomes a more massive, faster and more effective, and I'm getting too far from the computer, right? So then I will not be able to orientate back. Would you tell me? So it became a more efficient production that began creating, that continued creating machinery that would adapt to bodies that would produce at the pace, or that would be fittest to continue that production. If you disagree with me, it's okay, but I have a lot of literature review. And if you disagree with me, please provide me good literature so I can corroborate, right? This is a conversation. And today this conversation is directed, so stakeholders will believe that our ways of performing the science, our ways, blind people with disabilities of performing the science, are skills that are needed to produce better science, not only to produce better science, but also to target human development, and also to be able to target and to be able to move towards the accomplishment, right, of all the sustainable development goals. I did study at the University of Glasgow at the Computing Science Department, and I decided to study at the university, to do a PhD at the University of Glasgow on human-computing interaction because I lacked forms to use my own perceptual modalities to analyze the information. When I say lacking forms of using my perceptual modalities to analyze information, it's not to sit behind a computer screen to listen to an auditory image. No, it's for me to be able to use, for example, the timbre of a timpani. And the timpani is like a percussion. It's like a huge drum. I do not know how to describe it, but they use it a lot in the symphonic orchestra and philharmonic orchestras. It's a copper bowl with a membrane on top. And as I hear the sound, I'm thinking about that membrane vibrating and about the resonances produced by the air that is crashing on the walls of the timpani. I wanted to be able to do that. But even though the sciences were using audio at the end of the 1800s, these people are very smart. You heard them. They're so smart. They're very intelligent. We fear asking them questions, especially physicists and astrophysicists, someone. So why did they stop using it? That was the big question. Because if the evolution path evolved in the way that I'm telling you, that machinery kicked in, and then the economical model changed, and then it only impacted people that were the fittest to perform using the machinery and the technology, perhaps unwittingly, it delayed the development and the inclusion of people with other perceptual modalities to participate of the science. I do not know if you agree with me. Tell me if you don't. But bring me good references. If you disagree. So I sought for evidence. I'm a scientist, and I sought for evidence on the superiority of visual displays to do astronomy, astrophysics, any kind of data analysis. And me and my team, we couldn't find anything. I was here at the University of Glasgow, and we were doing this together with a university in the United States called the Harvard University with the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. So we said, okay, the neurosciences have evidence that when you use more than one sensorial modality, it increases sensitivity, but the scientists do not use it, especially the physicists and the astrophysicists. They are focused on looking at the sky and looking at the data. It must be because they did experiments and the evidence that is not useful for the data analysis. But because we couldn't find the evidence, what we did was that we performed experiments. And on the second slide, if we go to the second slide, are we on the second slide? Okay, so we performed perception experiments. And what we did is that we simulated a task that astronomers usually perform for the identification of black holes. The task derived from the idea that there is a black hole in the center of the galaxies. On the top right of the slide, there is a galaxy, a circular galaxy. It looks circular. In the center, there is a darker area, right? And there is a jet of energy emerging from it. So that is an artistic rendering of a circular galaxy. And you perhaps may perceive that around the galaxy, there is molecular gas. I think it's reddish and bluish. Correct me if I'm wrong. That molecular gas of the galaxy produces, when we are pointing the telescope to it, it produces a double peak symmetry spectra that we detect. And we think that when we detect that, we are detecting a galaxy. And at the bottom of the slide, there is the image of the spectra, of what I call the spectra with signature. So it may look, or it may feel, if you touch it, as a very old, old comb. Do you know what a comb is? You use it to brush your hair? Yeah, with very used tines that have, the tines may have different sizes, so they don't feel balanced. And then two tines spiking, but preserving symmetry. And those two tines may be anywhere on the comb, always preserving symmetry at any signal. The signal is the two times to noise, which are the lower times to noise ratio. So what we did is that we simulated that task that is on the screen, on the display. We simulated that task, and what we did was that we exposed. No, we don't expose. We had people identifying if the stimuli display had signal or not. And what we did is that we varied the span of the signals. Sometimes the presentation will have signals, sometimes it wouldn't have signal, and the signal to noise ratio would vary. And very, 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 very naughty of me, I did hide the signal, and I did hide the times in areas where attention modalities are compromised for the human being. It means that if people would be looking at the data, they wouldn't be able to see it. So we display that using audio only, visual display only, and also visual and audio together. And we displayed a number of repetitions, right? And randomly, in order to be able to discard the repetition factor. And then it became really depressing for a while, because then we evidence that when you use audio, it increases the professional astronomer sensitivity to events in the information, in the astronomy information, that by nature are blind to the human eye. So it's a moment when you say, oh, shall I publish that or shall I retire and go home? Because what this do is that it reveals a fracture in the science. So after we evidence that, what I did is that I engaged, because I'm at the University of Glasgow, but I'm not working on accessibility. Even though I had to create a sonification prototype, or the prototype that translate the numbers into sound, I wouldn't focus on that. I was like, okay, I just throw some lines of code so it will display. The quality of the audio will be okay so I can analyze it, but that was not my focus. My focus was and has always been to analyze the information, to analyze the data. So we did a lot of data analysis. Other folks that were not me did data analysis in the medical field, in aviation, in other fields. And then I was always being diverted to education and people outreach, not by my mentors at the University of Harvard or my mentors here at the University of Glasgow, but always when going to ask for employment. And don't feel discouraged, the blind people, don't feel discouraged. I would be going to observatories, and I went to one observatory, to the next, 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 and always to do data analysis, but always being diverted to education and people outreach and accessibility. So when I arrived, I will always be grateful to Italy, because it was under my late mentor, he died, rest in peace, Dr. Katsanevas, that they gave me the opportunity to go to the Gravitational Wave Observatory. As you may know, the Gravitational Wave Observatories, they began traducing or audifying the data, a direct translation of the data waveform to the audible domain, because the data would be in that audible domain and it would be easier to identify. So they brought me there in order to analyze the detector data, to separate signal from noise. It was the very first observatory. Thank you, Italy. Thank you, Glasgow. And we analyzed the data. The next slide, if you may. Forgive me. What do we have there? Oh, no. But can we go? If you want information about how carefully the experiments were designed, that's information. We are not going to read it. And on the next slide, there is a QR code. And then on the next slide, don't play the sound yet. Forgive me. I apologize. Forgive me. So we were separating signal from noise. And because it was the very first time an institution, a prestigious institution, any institution was using sound to do data analysis, I said, let's take a very well-known event to the scientific community. So I will try to identify things they have already identified. I will be able to corroborate my findings using a literature review. And also, if I find anything new, then they cannot say that is fake. So, because I face that all the time. That is something that happens often. I'm not slandering anyone. It's just how we are, right? We have to defend what we find. So we did that. I did the Acousto mathematical translation of the data that I was listening to separate signal from noise. And once I did the conversion from audio energy to gravitational wave energy or frequencies, I inserted that into the mathematical formulations, and we were able to listen to anisotropic or random values at the end of the data that machine learning algorithms did not find before. So what I want you to do, these patterns, if they seem to be, we are still trying on those. We're still trying to work on those, because we need to map them with the detector characterization. Gravitational waves and the interferometer that detect gravitational waves, they get a lot of noise. They get a lot of, not that noise is bad, they get a lot of pollutants in the information. So there are people characterizing the detector to get rid of everything that may pollute the information. So far, it hasn't been paired with any pollutant, so it may give indications of new characteristics on the distribution of the masses of the two objects that were merging, in this case, two neutron stars. And listen calmly and carefully. Do you need me to describe what you will hear? I never allow anyone describing the sounds, so to me. But if you fancy, I can tell you. Okay, so you will hear is mapped in my favorite instrument is the timpani, and you will hear at the end of the data you will hear like a sudden change of speed, like the tempo is changing very, very, very briefly. That indicates that is an auditory illusion. That indicates a ratio between two numbers. Neither the human eye nor the artificial intelligence was able to find those changes. Can we play it first? Please forgive me. No se oye. The slide is empty. It only has the sound. So you need to click on, I think it's on a small speaker. No? Okay. They may sound like that. So I do apologize. I repeated the change a couple of times. The question is why they were not using it. Why did they stop? Why? Even with the economical changes and the economical model changed, what justified that I couldn't come into the science and use my own perceptual modalities to analyze the data and feed artificial intelligence algorithms with my perceptual modalities? Why did they stop using it? And I'm asking that with this firmness and also thinking perhaps it's not that important or critical to answer that. I didn't say it's not important. It's not that critical to answer that, because now that we have results, it may mean that we are on a new scenario or on a new stage to stop the further harm and neglect to both the science and also the human development. And perhaps, right, in our science, the advancements and the development of missions, it continues without cease, almost proportional to the amount of people without disabilities or with late onset disabilities. It's not the same if you already have a permanence in the field and you get and you develop. Oh, I apologize. it's really low, right? It's in the low range of frequencies where the change happens. So to continue with what I was saying, I apologize. I forgot where I was. If the development of technologies continue without cease, perhaps directly proportional to the amount of people without disabilities performing in the science, and perhaps sometimes that takes me to think, will the effect be the same if instead of using visual displays or visual methods to accompany the development and implementation of scientific technologies, if they would have used audio, would the effect be the same? I will never know, right? Because now we have to catch up using audio modalities, not for access. Access is one thing. The other thing is data analysis, us bringing our skills and our methods of analyzing the data, which seem to be relevant, very, very, very relevant and important for the sciences. So far, working in Italy and then after graduating from Glasgow, I learned that the effort of doing top science and the effort, the initiative of human development are equal and are the same. Those things that scientists do to say, I will not do education and people outreach, or I will not dedicate to human development, or bring those methods into the scientific analysis, because that is something that is for reaching out or for communication, that is not real. That is not true. And what I say is that when we develop these technologies, and when different institutions like the Louis Braille institutions, the RNIB, etc., they get together to develop multisensorial perception so we can get into the economical market of the sciences, it generates a change of mindset that will help everyone. Thank you so much and have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful day.